This morning I would like to talk about what I've called Pastor Wagner's practical tips on money management. And I had hoped to get through this whole section today, but if I'm going to be honest with myself, it probably is not going to happen. I want to go over seven rules. Seven rules. I mean, I put rules in quotes because they're my rules, so that means they're not really rules, but anyway. Suggestions, I guess you could say, seven strong suggestions. We maybe put it that way, but I'll call them rules for fun anyway. And this is basically going to be a practical application of the biblical instruction that I've given up until this point. So I'm not going to have a ton of verses in this section, not very many. But I am supposed to be an example to you, and I will give you a few verses along those lines just to show you that when I'm giving you these tips, I'm showing you how I do it and how I've done it for the last 20 some years in pretty much all of my adult life. For the majority of these things, there's been a few things that I've added over the years, but the majority of these things I've done for a very long time. 1 Timothy 4 and verse 12 is written to a preacher, and it says, written to a young preacher, "Let no man despise thy youth, but be thou an example of the believers in word, in conversation," that's your manner of life, "in charity, in spirit, in faith, in purity." So I'm supposed to be an example, not only in word and what I say, because talk is cheap, anybody can say things, right? But I'm supposed to be an example in conversation, in how I live and what I do. And these things are what I'm going to share with you of how I've done it. For the most part, there are a few things that I actually haven't done because it just didn't apply to me or pertain to me, and I'll explain that later. Let's look at Titus 2 and verse 7. There's a number of verses in the Bible that tell a preacher to be an example, which is a weighty responsibility, as you can imagine. Titus 2 and verse 7. It says, "In all things showing thyself a pattern of good works," he's again writing to a preacher, "in doctrine showing uncorruptness, gravity, sincerity." So in all things showing thyself a pattern. You know what a pattern is? It's what you base what you're doing off of. If you have a pattern to sew a shirt or something like that, right? You sew the shirt according to the pattern, right? So you look at the pattern and then you do accordingly. And that's what a preacher is supposed to be there for. 1 Peter 5 and verse 3. That's why I'd say if a preacher's finances are a complete mess, well, he's not a very good pattern. He's not a very good example. And he needs to most definitely reform his ways. 1 Peter 5 and verse 3 says, "Neither," this is again speaking to the elders, he says there in verse 1, "the elders which are among you I exhort." So he's speaking to elders, which are pastors, which are those that feed the flock, verse 2, right? Preachers, taking the oversight, the ones that have the oversight, right there in verse 2. And he says to them, "Neither is being lords over God's heritage, but being ensamples to the flock." Ensamples is an old word which means examples. It's a synonym. So the pastor is not supposed to be the lord over God's heritage and be bossing everybody around and just telling everybody to do whatever he feels like, but he's supposed to be an example. And then 1 Timothy 3 and verse 10. Like I said, there's a number of verses here. And since I don't have very many verses for you, I want to give you some scripture before we get started. 2 Timothy 3 and verse 10. "But that was fully known, my doctrine." So this is the Apostle Paul writing to Timothy. Paul was a minister himself. And he says here, "But that was fully known, my doctrine, manner of life, purpose, faith, long-suffering, charity, patience, persecutions, etc." So thou hast fully known my manner of life. And I've said this before in this series, but you wouldn't really know my manner of life and how I manage my finances if I didn't tell you some of the things, at least. I mean, you can see some things from the outside, but there's plenty of things that you wouldn't know. Like, oh, I can just look at Pastor Wagner and I can tell that he's got 20 different bank accounts with all these different, funds and reasons for, putting it here and there. And you wouldn't know any of that. How would you possibly know that? Right? So that's why I'm making known some of these things to you. So that if it makes sense to you, you can say, I like that idea. I think I'll do that. Because I've certainly learned a lot of things from people over the years, and I hear things, and I think, oh, that's a really good idea. I like that. I will add that in, or I will change, you know, whatever I'm doing right now to do differently. And one more, Hebrews 13 and verse 7. Remember them which have the rule over you. That's the pastor, the elder, the ruler of the congregation. Remember them that have the rule over you, which have the rule over you, who have spoken unto you the word of God. So this tells you it's the pastor, whose faith follow, considering the end of their conversation, their manner of life. So follow his faith, consider the end of their conversation. If the pastor's got a good conversation, then follow it. If he doesn't, well, certainly you don't follow that. All right, so let's get into the rules. Rule number one, and these aren't necessarily in any particular order, but this is a good one to start out with. Rule number one, don't finance anything. Don't finance anything. And I will add in parentheses, with the possible exception of your first house. Okay? Now, you can do the 100% down payment method. That's my favorite one. Especially if you, it just depends on your situation. If you happen to be a young man and you went to college and you got a really good high paying career and you have no other debt and you just start socking money away like tens of thousands of dollars per year, you know, start socking away 50 grand a year, you could easily buy a house with cash in very short time. And there are some people that could be in that position. Most people in that position would just have a ton of crap, a bunch of car payments and whatever else, and would be no better off than the kid they graduated high school with that's working at 7-Eleven. But you could actually pay cash for a house. But I'm being realistic here. Most people, this is just not gonna happen, even with the best of intentions, especially today with as expensive as housing is. So I say don't finance anything with the possible exception of your first house. Now here's the very simple thing. If you just live by this maxim, this precept, your life will go very well, at least relatively speaking. If you don't have the cash in hand to buy something, then don't buy it. And this is so simple, right? How do you determine if you can buy something or not? Do I have the cash in hand? Like literally, do I have the cash in hand, or is it in my bank account where I can write a check? Do I have the cash in hand to buy something? If I don't buy it. And this goes for everything except your first home. Everything. Could be a hamburger. Do I buy the hamburger? Well, do I have the cash in hand to buy the hamburger? Right? If I don't, I don't buy it. Could be a $1,000 computer. Do I buy it? Well, do I have $1,000? And furthermore, have I also like gotten out of debt and have my emergency fund and all this stuff, right? There's plenty of these things that I'm going to rattle off here, which you wouldn't be, you know, probably buying if you weren't in the position to do so, even if you actually did have the cash in hand. But let's continue. How about a smartphone? Well, do I buy a new phone? Well, do I have the cash in hand to buy it? Do I have the $700, $800, $1,000, or whatever, how much ever you want to go? Do I have the cash in hand? If I don't, well, I don't buy it. I keep my old phone, or I don't have a phone until I have the cash. Or a car. Do I buy a new car? Well, the answer is real simple. Do I have the money in my bank account that I can write a check for it? And have I covered everything else that I need to take care of? Then, you know, buy the car. If you don't have the cash, well, don't buy the car. Drive the old one. Could be a tractor. Could be an HVAC system. Could be college tuition. Anything, like literally anything. The question is, do I have the cash or not? If you don't buy it. Never take out a loan for anything except your first, and I would add, small and modest house. That's your rule. That's my rule anyway. And Braden, I've mentioned this to you before, but I do want to speak to you because it's really important if you get this right young. In not very many years, you're going to want to buy a car. And knowing you and your father, you're probably going to want to buy a truck, right? You're going to want to buy a truck. When I say car, I mean vehicle. You're going to want to buy something that has four wheels and a motor. I can almost guarantee it in the future. So start saving for it now so you can buy it yourself with cash. So you got plenty of years to go. You got, what, probably four years at least? That's a long time. If you get busy and start saving, you can save up money to buy a car. Never buy a car if you don't have the money in your hand to pay for it or in your bank account. That's your rule. Never buy it. So you look at a car, you say, I want to buy this car. Well, the only question you have to ask yourself is, do I have the money in my bank account or in my piggy bank to buy it? And if you don't, you don't buy the car. If you do, then go ahead. You never want to take out a car loan. Okay? This is what everybody out there is going to try to talk you into. And if you ever go to a dealer, a car dealer, and he tells you, you know what, don't worry about having the money for it. All you have to do, you can just sign this form. You can take out this loan. You make payments on this thing for the next 5, 6, 7 years, whatever. And, you know, you don't actually have to pay for it. You can just make payments on it. And that's kind of the same thing as paying for it, right? You know what you tell them? I told you one thing to tell them before, but I'll tell you something else. Just look them right in the eye and say, sir, do you think I'm stupid? Do you think I'm stupid? Why would I pay interest on a loan on a depreciating asset? Tell them that. Why are you insulting my intelligence, sir? Or someday you may go to a store. You may go to a department store. You want to buy yourself a new coat. And you got your $100 coat there, and you go up to the cash register. And the cashier says, you know, you can take out this credit card. I can give you this application. It'll only take a minute. You can take out this store credit card, and then it'll give you 25% off this coat. So it'll only cost you $75 instead of $100. You can save $25 just by signing your name right here. And then you can even pay it off right now if you want to. You can pay it off right at the counter. But just take out this credit card, you can get a better deal. This will happen to you. I guarantee you this will happen to you. This has happened to all of us. You know what you do? You look him or her in the eye and you say, I am not a debt slave and I never intend to be one. No, thank you. And I've done that. And believe me, it's tempting. You're like, man, I could save like 50 bucks on this coat or whatever. Just take out the credit card. I could cancel it later. Yeah, I could. I could get into the old mill of signing up for the card and then all this forgetting to cancel it and all this nonsense. You know what? Forget about it. There's a reason they're trying to give you that credit card. And it's not for your best interest. Don't take it. Or if someone ever encourages you to take out a student loan for college, look him or her in the eye and say, why are you trying to ruin my life? Why are you trying to make me a debt slave for life? That's what you tell them. So if you don't want to be a slave, never finance anything. Proverbs 22 and verse 7. Because if you finance anything, if you go into debt for anything, that's a house included, you are a slave. Until you pay that thing off, whatever it is, you are a slave. The Bible's words, not mine. Proverbs 22 and verse 7. The rich ruleth over the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender. And a servant, as I've said in the past, in the Bible, a servant is a bondservant, a slave. You are a slave to the bank if you take out a loan for anything, or you're a slave to the credit card company, whatever you are. Your freedom has been restricted. You must pay off that debt, or they're coming after you. And that gives you less money to do all the other things in life that you need or want to. You are a slave to that extent. All right, rule number 2. Pay for things with physical cash, not credit. This will make you much more conscious of what you're spending money on. And it will help you to keep within your budget. Now, there are certain things. I mean, this rule definitely has an exception to it. If you buy anything online, you can't pay cash, obviously. You know, try buying something on Amazon and mailing them a check or something like that. That doesn't work. You don't do that, right? So there are obviously certain things that you're not going to be able to pay cash for. But in-person purchases, I think it's a great idea, and I do this myself, pay cash for things. Now, there are a few exceptions that I have in my own life. I'm not going to get into all the details. There are a few things that I wouldn't pay cash for in person, but the vast majority of things we do. Groceries, restaurants, clothes, gas, all that kind of stuff. And I know paying cash for gas is a pain in the butt. It's a pain in the butt. You got to calculate how much you need, and then you got to walk in the store, you got to give them the money, and then if you didn't do the calculation right, then you got to go back in and get your change. It's a pain. It is a pain in the butt, but I do it anyway. I do it anyway because I do it for 2 reasons. For one thing, it's just better for your finances. But for 2, our society is quickly heading toward a cashless society. You've probably noticed this. And that's why I haven't put my credit cards on my phone. and, you know, use my phone to pay or whatever. I'm resisting as much as I can because I don't like the direction this is going. It is probably going to happen in our lifetimes, and it could very well happen, and even in the next 5 or 10 years, where pretty much everything is cashless. You pay with your phone or whatever it'll be, something, you'll pay for everything like that. Or God forbid, you'll pay with your face or whatever, right? I mean, there'll be something where it'll be completely cashless. And that is going to be a dystopian nightmare. That's a horrible, horrible system to live under, because your freedom is completely taken away. There's records of everything that you buy, everywhere that you go, everything that you do. And I want to resist that. That's why I resist paying with a credit card whenever I can. And I, like I said, don't do the card on the phone thing and those kind of things. I want to do whatever I can to try to slow this thing down. And the more people that do that, the more people that pay cash, and the more demand there is for cash, the longer we can push this thing off. And some companies and restaurants are catching on to this. There's like Willow Spring, one of my favorite restaurants here in town. You go there, it's right on the receipt. If you pay cash, it's this price. If you pay with a credit card, it's more, right? They actually charge you more to pay with a credit card. And I like that. I get a good deal. I tell them, they say, you're paying cash, and I smile at them, you're darn right, I'm not giving money to those banks. And they laugh. All right, rule number three. If you use a credit card, use it as cash and pay it off daily. All right, forget this monthly stuff. Forget about paying your credit card off at the end of the month. That's crazy talk, in my view anyway. Because you know what happens when you pay it off at the end of the month? You probably don't pay it off at the end of the month. You look at the end of the month, you're like, whoa, I got like $1,500 on this thing. Where did any of that come from? And you're like, I have no idea what's on here. What are these charges? You realize how many scammers could take your card and run up probably a couple $100 a month on it, and the average person would have no idea. They're just looking at all these transactions like, I don't know what any of this stuff is. Okay, whatever. They wouldn't know. Pay it off monthly. That's crazy. Pay it off daily. You got online banking these days. You got right on your phone. Just make it a part of your daily routine. I got it on my to-do list. I have a to-do list that I print out every day of the week. And every day of the week, it's got different stuff on it that I do every day. And then things that I don't do every day, I write, you know, on the next day, whatever I'm going to do. But one thing I do, check bank account every day. I just pull it up. I pay the credit card off every day if there's anything on there. That way I know what's going on. I got a good, tight grip on my finances. Never keep a balance on a credit card more than a day or two. I mean, for one thing, you do have the Bible, which says, you know, defer not to pay, right? That's in Proverbs chapter 3, I think it is, when you owe somebody something. Proverbs 3 and verse 27, withhold not good from them to whom it is due when it is in the power of thine hand to do it. Say not unto thy neighbor or unto thy Visa card, go and come again, and tomorrow I will give when thou hast it by thee. Pay the darn thing off. Don't wait until the end of the month. Pay it off every day. Now, if you've ever had credit card debt in the past, do not use a credit card, but rather use a debit card. It works the same way. It just debits money from your checking account instead of adding a balance to your credit card. I'd say if you've ever had credit card debt, don't use a credit card. If you have credit card debt, cut up your credit card today, like right now. I don't mind. I mean, seriously, if any of you have credit card debt, I won't even feel bad if you open up your purse or wallet right now and get yourself a scissors and cut it up right now during the service. In fact, we'll have a celebration. We'll stop the service right now and have a celebration. And if you're listening to this recording, stop the recording, cut your credit card up right now, and then move on. And never use it again. A man has got to know his limitations. Just as a wise man who was once an alcoholic will never drink again, if he's smart, even moderately, he's not going to say, well, you know, it's been a few years, I could probably have a beer, it'll be all right. You know what that guy's called? A returning alcoholic, more than likely. Not a good idea. He's never going to drink again because he knows he has a weakness toward it. And so, in the same way, a man who once had credit card debt, he's never going to use a credit card again for the same reason, if he's smart. Because he realizes, you know what? This got me before, and there's something in me. Apparently, I've got a problem saying no. I've got a problem, you know, controlling myself. Just like the guy with a gambling addiction. You'd be insane to go to the casino again after you've kicked the addiction. Now, I will add a caveat here. If you had credit card debt years ago, and for years now you've been using a credit card responsibly, and you've gotten clean, I'll use the addiction terminology, you've gotten clean, you've used it responsibly for years, okay, fine. You know, then you've proven yourself. That's all right. But if you're just now kicking the habit and think, I can probably still use this card, you know, I'll just use it like cash, you're fooling yourself. That's a stupid idea, and don't do it. Now, somebody might say, well, you know, using a debit card is a lot riskier than using a credit card because of all these scammers, right? Somebody can get a hold of your number, and if it's a credit card, you know, they just run it up on the card, and then your bank will just cancel the transaction, and, you know, you're not out anything. But if it's a debit card, they'll just drain your bank account, and then you're screwed, right? People think that. But that's not really true. I mean, they might drain your bank account. But the bank has the same protections, the same fraud protections with a debit card as it does with a credit card. So if they make a charge on your debit card, the bank will make that right, and they'll put it right back in there. This is why I recommend, if you use a debit card, I recommend that you leave only $1,000 in your checking account as your zero balance, right? That's what I've done this for decades. $1,000 is my zero balance, right? So if I log into my online banking and I see there's more than $1,000 in the checking account, that means money has come in from somewhere. If I see there's less than $1,000 in the checking account, that means something has been charged, you know, on my debit card, or a check's come out, or an automatic draft, or something like that. So basically that tells me I need to look at the checking account if it's not $1,000, if there's more or less in there. And then if something comes out, if I had an electric bill come out for $105, then I take my $105 out of the bill money account, I transfer it to the checking account, and now I've got $1,000 in the checking account. That's my zero balance again. That's how I do it. Works quite well for me. But if you leave just $1,000 in there, the worst thing that could happen is somebody's going to drain $1,000 out of your checking account. If your finances, I mean, if you're financially responsible, that shouldn't be a crisis. Like, that should just be like, oh, well, that sucks. The bank will give it back to me in a day or two. Big deal, right? If losing $1,000 is like a major catastrophe for you, you've got problems. You really need to listen to the series and do what I've told you here, because that you have serious problems. So that would limit the amount that they could take out of it. All right, rule number four, get out of debt as quickly as possible. Get out of debt as quickly as possible. Now, this would go for any debt. And what I'm going to say here, though, I'm going to give you a list of things that you need to cut back on if you're in debt, which will enable you to get out of debt quickly. So the things that I'm going to list here, these would be, if you're in any debt except for your house payment, these things would apply. I mean any debt, car payment, student loans, credit cards, personal loans, HELOCs, second mortgages, anything. If you're in debt, anything but your primary mortgage, then the things that I'm about ready to say, pay attention and start cutting. Now, if all you have is a car loan, or all you have is a house loan, and you also have your emergency fund built up, and you're investing 15% of your income, and you're giving and all those kind of things, then the things that I'm listing here, you might want to cut back on some of these things. You know, might be wise, or maybe not. You'd be like, you know what? I'm good. I'm doing okay. All I have is my house fund. All I have is my house. I'm paying this off every month. I'm putting a little extra toward it. I'm trying to pay it off quickly. I've got no other debt. I've got my fully funded emergency fund. I'm investing, and I can enjoy some of these things that I'm about ready to list off here. So it depends on what station in life you are. But if you have any debt except for a house payment, you'll be cutting these things out. That's what I think anyway. So in order to pay down debt, you first need to stop spending money on unnecessary things. And I'm going to list you off a whole bunch of things here. The first one is eating out for lunch instead of packing. This can easily cost you $264 a month just by doing that, or save you $264 a month if you're doing it. $12 per meal, which is probably about average for lunch these days, could be more, could be slightly less, depending on how quickly you want to kill yourself, what kind of garbage you're eating. But anyway, $12 a month times $22 or times 22 working days in a month is $264. So right there, just going out to lunch every day instead of packing a lunch, over $250 you could save. Eating out for dinner. you know, depending on the size of your family and the frequency that you do it, you could easily spend hundreds, multiple hundreds of dollars per month eating out very easily, especially if you got a family of four or five or something. I mean, you could, man, I mean, you got a house payment going out to eat, you know, not very many times a month. You could save a ton of money by cutting that out. I'm, like I said, I want to be clear. I'm not saying that nobody can go out to eat. Hey, if your finances are in good shape and you're out of debt and you're, you know, emergency fund is funded and you're investing or whatever, go out to eat. You know, you live like no one else. Now you can live and give like no one else. But if you're in debt, that's a totally different story. It's like Ramsey says, I like what he says, that if you're in debt, the only time that you should see the inside of a restaurant is if you're working at one. How about getting a coffee, or especially specialty drinks at a coffee shop? One drink per day can easily cost you $150 a month. $5 per drink times 30 days. Now, for those of you who don't like coffee and are up on your high horse saying, I never buy myself a mocha or a latte, the same thing would go for pop, energy drinks, any of that junk you buy at Quick Trip or whatever. You realize, just start adding up the money that the average person spends at the gas station, not on gas. Like, I'm not saying like I'm the role model here to follow or something, because I'm kind of weird, but I mean, I pretty much never spend a dime at a gas station except for gas. Like, I don't buy anything. I don't buy pop and junk and treats and junk food and whatever else. But I guarantee you, the average person probably spends hundreds of dollars a month at a gas station not buying gas. Just add it up. Pay attention to what you're doing. Keep track. Get that spending app like I told you and put every single thing you spend in that thing, and you would be surprised at how much money you are blowing on all kinds of stuff that you didn't realize. How about smartphones? This is a hot button. This can easily cost you $100 a month or more, depending on the size of your family. There are cheaper options out there. There's a couple of discount ones that I've heard about, like $25 a month. But yeah, these things can be quite expensive, and especially if you're dumb enough to give them to your kids. And on along those lines, please, for God's sake, for the sake of everything that is good and righteous and true and holy, don't give your kids smartphones. Somebody said in their right, when you give your kids smartphones, you don't just give them access to the world, though you do. You give the world access to them. Do you know how many sickos, how many sexual predators, how many wicked people there are in this country? I just listened to a podcast the other day. It is unbelievable. You give your kid a smartphone, you're giving the world access to them. You know what you're giving them? You're giving them pornography in their pocket. You think, oh, not my son. Don't kid yourself. You're out of your mind if you think that your son's not going to look at porn on that phone. I mean, maybe there could be some godly young man who's been well-trained, Christian young man, has a good conscience. Maybe he would have the ability to resist that as a teenager. But don't bet on it. All right, another thing, cable or satellite TV. Now, I haven't had TV in 20 years, 2005. I had a box, like the TV. You remember the old TVs, the big, thick, deep ones, right? Before they had the flat screen. I've never owned a flat screen TV. But I had one of the big old boxes. And I had that for a few years after I got rid of the connection to it. So, I mean, I had no antenna, no cable, no satellite, no nothing. It just sat there. I didn't use it for anything. I could watch movies on it. I don't even think I did that. But anyway, I had the box for maybe a few years, and then I got the bright idea that this thing's taking up space, and what do I need it for anyway? And I traded it to a lady in my church for some chicken pot pie and meatloaf. Now, it was a great deal for me. It was a rotten deal for her. She definitely got the short end of that stick. But I got some food, you know, that kept me alive for another day, so that was a great deal. But anyway, so I didn't have any idea how much cable or satellite cost, so I looked it up, and it looks like it's about $65 to $80 per month is what I saw, which is a horrible waste of money on something that is going to completely corrupt your soul. So getting rid of this filth will not only save your budget, but it'll also save your soul. TV is just awful. I've said it before, I'm just shocked when I see it, when I see the commercials, when I see the crap. I don't even watch it, but if I happen to see it somewhere, I'm appalled and aghast. Netflix and similar subscriptions. Netflix, I just looked it up. I don't have Netflix either, but it runs from $8 to $25 per month, depending on your plan. So instead of watching filth, and there's a lot of filth on Netflix, there's probably a handful of decent things on there, but I've been told anyway, the Netflix movies that they produce are absolutely desperately wicked and wicked garbage. I had a Christian man tell me that one time. He'd seen some of them before. I haven't. But anyway, you know, rather than watching this filth, you could read a book, you could spend time with your family, you could go outside, all kinds of things that you could do that would be productive and help to increase the quality of your life and of your family, rather than sitting in front of the TV watching Netflix all the time. And if you're in debt, get rid of it. I mean, I'm not saying it's not wrong to have Netflix, okay? I'm not saying it's wrong to have Netflix. I'm sure there's some decent stuff that you could watch on there if you're careful. Here's another one. This one would probably almost get me tarred and feathered these days. Amazon Prime, $15 a month. If you're in debt, get rid of it. You say, oh, I can't imagine not having one day shipping. What would I do? What would I do? What if I needed something overnight? There's a place called Walmart. You know, for one thing, you could drive over there and buy it. Or you could wait. You know, that's something that mankind used to do a long time ago. They waited for things, you know. But Amazon Prime, $15 a month. I remember back in the day, it used to be $8. Remember that? That wasn't all that long ago, maybe 10 or 12 years ago. $15 a month. Now, here's the thing, though. You can still get free shipping on Amazon if you don't have Prime. You know that, right? You just have to order more than $35 per order. Right? So just wait. Wait until you have $35 of stuff to buy that you legitimately need to buy and you're going to buy anyway. You know, if you want to get free shipping, don't add a $20 item that you really don't want or need just to get free shipping, right? That's not very smart. But just wait. Just wait. That's what we do. I don't have Amazon Prime. Could I afford it? Yeah, I could afford it, but why? I did have it years ago for a short time, but I thought, why? I don't need it. I just wait. Wait for the $35 to pile up in there and then buy the thing. Occasionally, they give me a month for free. Occasionally, they'll give me a week for free. They'll do that. They see you haven't used it for a while. And, hey, you want to have a week for free? Sure thing. And I take it, and then I put it on a note on my calendar, cancel it, you know, in a few days from now. So anyway, you know, you can save $15 a month doing that. That's over $150 a year. And you know what else? If you get rid of Amazon Prime, I guarantee you, you will buy fewer things on Amazon. You will. Because when you have Prime and it's free one-day shipping and you have an urge like, man, I'd like to have anything under the sun pretty much, buy it. It'll show up either today or tomorrow. But if you don't have free shipping, you're like, well, I don't have anything else in my cart. I don't want to wait for a week until I get the $35 in there. Whatever, you know. You'll end up buying a lot less stuff. I guarantee it if you don't have Prime. And if you're strategic about it, you'll save money. You'll save the money on Prime and you'll have the free shipping. You just have to have a little bit of patience. All right, internet. Internet can cost you anywhere from about $45 to over $100 a month. It's becoming pretty much a necessity these days. You know, everybody knows that. But if you are in debt, you could cut it out if necessary, and you could go to the library and use their connection. You could go, there's free public Wi-Fi pretty much everywhere, every coffee shop, every restaurant, I mean, a lot of businesses. You could pretty much go just about anywhere and get on free Wi-Fi and do whatever you had to do. If you're in debt, right? Desperate times call for desperate measures. Here's another one that would get me probably massacred, is pets. Yeah, I'll say it. If you're in debt, a good way to save a bunch of money is get rid of your pets. I know, people hate me for saying it, because everybody loves their pets. But pets, as you know, are quite expensive. Buying a pet, I probably don't need to tell you this, hundreds of dollars, thousands of dollars. I mean, people pay for dogs, literally thousands of dollars for a dog that's going to die in 8 to 12 years. Guaranteed. Talk about a depreciating asset. Guaranteed dead in like 12 years. Thousands of dollars. It's madness, I think. I mean, now, hey, if that's your thing, if you're out of debt, if you've got a fully funded emergency fund, if you're investing 15% of your gross income, go out and buy yourself a $10,000 St. Bernard. I don't really care. But if you're in debt, well, consider your ways. That's, you know, those things are expensive. Not to mention food, vet bills, grooming, flea treatment, boarding, if you go anywhere. Lots of expense there. Smoking. I mean, this is obvious. This can cost you hundreds of dollars per month. I mean, these days, maybe even thousands a month with expense as much as cigarettes are. But obviously, this can, you know, not only destroy your budget, but your health as well. So that's a no-brainer. Going shopping for clothes that you don't need. I'm probably speaking to the people that have two X chromosomes in the room more than the ones that have an X and a Y. But this is a big thing. If you're in debt, quit going shopping. I guarantee you, you have a whole closet full of more clothes than you could wear, probably for the rest of your life. You do not ever need to go shopping again when you're in debt, more than likely. And if you do, you can go to the thrift store and pick them up for just about nothing. But more than likely, you do not need to go shopping at all for a long time. None of us do. And you have time to get out of debt before you ever darken the door of a shopping center again. But people spend, mostly of the female type, spend hundreds and hundreds of dollars regularly shopping. Or going to a movie theater. You know, if you're in debt, you don't go to a movie theater, right? Rent a DVD from the library for free, right? And there you go. You got free entertainment if you want to see a movie. I've only not, again, not that I'm some standard because, you know, I'm Mr. Boring that doesn't do anything, but I've been to one movie in the last 7 years since we moved down here, and I don't know, maybe a couple movies in the last 10 or 15 years. I don't remember exactly. But one movie since I moved down here, I remember that for a fact, and that was only last year when I saw Matt Walsh's Am I Racist, that documentary. That was fantastic. I highly recommend you see it. But yeah, I haven't been. I've been to a movie theater once in 7 years. Could I afford to go to a movie theater? Yeah, I could. I could. But it's just not my thing. But if you're in debt, that's definitely an easy one to cut out. Going to professional sports games. This can get very expensive. Baseball games I don't think are as bad, but football games, aren't those things like 100 and some bucks a ticket? It's crazy. Crazy. Now, again, I won't rattle off all the things, but if you're in good financial shape and you want to go to a football game, go ahead. Do anything you want. I don't care. If you're out of debt, fully funded emergency fund, investing 15% of your income, I don't care what you do as long as it's in your budget. But if you're in debt, don't go to a sports game. That's crazy. I mean, one you have to pay for, I'm talking about. Going to concerts, right? That's a lot of money. I've never been to one, but I'm aren't those tickets like 100 bucks or 80 bucks? I don't know. I mean, they're expensive. I don't know what they are. Like I said, never been to one. Extra cars and toys, like four-wheelers, side-by-sides, motorcycles, boats, snowmobiles, you know, all that kind of stuff. No. If you're in debt, no, you don't have any of that stuff. So if you're doing any of the previously listed things with any frequency, it's no wonder that you're in debt and you're struggling to get by. I mean, add those things up. There's thousands of dollars a month in, you know, just being spent on stuff that you don't need. Now, if you're in debt and or you're not saving money, then cutting out these things will save you hundreds or even thousands of dollars per month that you can put towards paying off debt or saving money. Now, these are just the things that I could think about. There are probably a lot of things that people spend money on that I don't even know about. Like, I pretty much live in a little hole. I'm sure if I look through the average person's bank account statement, I'd probably find all kinds of stuff that people spend money on that I had no idea that, you know, that is a thing. But anyway, these are just the few things that I know about that people blow a lot of money on that are, you know, low-hanging fruit that could easily be cut out. Like I said, you know, if you're in good financial shape, this is different. Now, this would also be age dependent. You know, if you're 2 years from retirement and you've got nothing saved, I don't care if you are out of debt. Right there's a list of things. Cut them all out. You know, you're 2 years from retirement, you got nothing? Well, cut them all out because you got a lot of work to do in the next couple of years. And, you know, probably for the rest of your life. Now, once you've gotten your spending under control by eliminating wasteful and unnecessary purchases, then start working to pay off your debt. So the first thing you got to do is get rid of all that stuff. You need to make a budget, right? First thing you need to do is make a budget. Do it on a spreadsheet, do it on a budgeting app, whatever. And you look at your income, and then you assign every dollar a place, and you budget out every category where all the money is going to go, and you'll all of a sudden think that you got a raise. This is what Ramsey always says. When he goes through this with people and they do a budget for the first time, they're like, I feel like I just got a $500 a month raise. I got all this money that I didn't even realize that I had because I was just wasting it and all this other stuff. You got to make a budget first. Cut out all this stuff, and then you take whatever money you have after your basic needs are covered, your four walls, as they call it, your rent, your utilities, your transportation, and one other thing I can't think of it right now, food. Once that's covered, then you know pretty much everything else is going on your debt. And I'll talk about this more in a week or so when I go through the debt snowball, because I'm going to go through Ramsey's 7 baby steps. But you want to list all those debts off, smallest to largest. And then you want to start with your smallest debt first, and you want to attack it with a vengeance. You got to go scorched earth on this thing. Put all your spare money towards that one, and you make minimum payments on all the rest. So if you found $1,000 in your budget after you cut out all the stuff I just listed there, and you found out that you actually have $1,000 now freed up in your budget, and you've got a few credit cards, and you got a student loan, you got a personal loan, you got a HELOC, you got whatever, you know, you got a car loan, you list all those off, smallest to largest, and say that lowest credit card is $800. Boom, that thing's gone. First thing, you know, there's your $1,000. The next $200 goes on the next debt. Right, and then next month I've got $1,000 to put on the next one, and I'm making minimum payments on all the rest. Right, and then you just keep doing that. You pay that next one off, and then all the money you were putting on that one goes on the next one, and you just snowball that thing down. Now, paying off the smallest debt quickly will give you a sense of accomplishment. It'll motivate you to pay off the rest. There's a psychological component to this. That's why you go smallest to largest. You don't go highest interest rate to lowest interest rate. Somebody thinks, well, that would make more sense mathematically to pay off the higher interest rate one. But I'll talk about that in a second. No, you go smallest to largest because it's a psychological thing. You get momentum. You get that first one paid off and you feel like, I can do this. You know, I've done, okay, I'm getting somewhere. So after you pay off the smallest one, like I said, then you put all the money that you have available toward the next one, including the money you were paying on the first debt. Like I said, don't worry about interest rates. Except in the case where two debts are similar size, then you could do the higher interest rate one first. Like let's say you have two student loans, and one of them maybe was a federal loan, and one of them was a private loan, and they're both for $10,000, and one of them is 8% interest, and one of them is 6% interest. Okay, pay the 8 one off first, right? That would make sense. But if they're not similar size, it doesn't matter. I don't care if you have a credit card with 25% interest and you have a student loan with 5% interest. If the credit card is way smaller, pay it off first, or other way around, whatever. If the student loan is way smaller, pay it off first. You know, don't worry about the interest rate. So you might think that it makes mathematical sense to pay off the higher interest rates first, but this is not a math problem. It's a behavior problem. It's not a math problem. It's a behavior problem. If you were, I told somebody this the other day, if you were, and I heard it from Ramsey, if you were good at math, you wouldn't be in debt in the first place. So don't start talking about math with me, with your debt. It's not a math problem. It's a behavior problem. So pay them off smallest to largest. Repeat the process until you pay off each debt on the list. The money you freed up from paying off the smaller ones will allow you to pay off the larger ones more quickly. And this is, like I said, what Ramsey calls the debt snowball. And then the important thing is, once you're out of debt, stay out of debt by saving the money that you used to be paying on the debts. Right? This is like other things in life. If you're 100 pounds overweight and you go on a diet and you start eating healthy and doing some exercise, and you lose that 100 pounds, What do you do after you lost the last pound? The same exact thing that you've been doing for the entire time that you lost 100 pounds. Or maybe tweak it just a little bit because you don't need to lose weight anymore, but you do almost the same thing as you were doing before. You know what happens to people when they lose weight and then they gain it all back? You know what they did? They did all the hard work, they lost all the weight, and then they went back to their old ways, and guess what? The weight comes back. It's the same way with debt. For goodness sakes, if you work hard to pay off all your debt, then keep doing that. Keep living like that. Keep living on that budget or close to it, right? And save that money that you were paying on debt, and then you're never going to be in this situation again. Get that emergency fund saved up. Get those sinking funds saved up, and I'll talk about that here in just a minute. All right, rule number 5, create a budget and make it automatic. Create a budget and make it automatic, which this probably should have come before paying the debt off, as I mentioned. I've told you this before, I recommend using some kind of a spending or a budgeting app. I have an app, it's just called Spending, and it's a simple one, and it is a rear view mirror looking system. Basically, you're looking at the past, right? You record all of your spending, and at the end of the month, you can see where it all went, right? That's good. It's, you know, it could be better using a planning app, like, you know, Ramsey's got one, the Every Dollar. I tried it. Just didn't, for my finances and being self-employed and not having steady income and just various things, it just didn't. It just wasn't for me. I think for the average person, it'd be great. But for me, my situation is just weird. And I used it for a month, but I used both at the same time for a month. But the spending app works fine for me. But with Ramsey's app and ones like it, it's nice because at the beginning of the month, you put in there what your paychecks are going to be, and then you budget. You give every dollar a place to go, and you end up with zero, right? You've got X amount coming in, and all of it goes somewhere. It goes to some category, whether that's a miscellaneous category where you have a little extra padding or whatever, but everything goes to a place. And then as you have expenses, those expenses get tied to whatever that category was. So when you put gas in the car, it goes to the gas category, right? And then if you budgeted $100 a month for gas, at the end of the month, maybe you see, well, I went a little over, so you know, maybe I spent 110. So you have to adjust that and then, you know, take that out of some other part of your budget. But anyway, that can be very helpful. But at a minimum, at least keep track, budget ahead of time for the month. You know, make a budget where you say, you know, here's all where here I'm going to pay. You know, this month goes to my mortgage. This month goes to, you know, my car fund. This month goes to my medical fund. This month goes to, or this much goes to clothing and groceries and whatever else, and you've got it all planned out before the month even starts. And then here's the cool thing about the modern age that we live in, make it automatic. You can make it, a lot of this, you can make it automatic in your bank account where things just, you have automatic transfers, especially if your paycheck is the same every month. Mine used to be years ago. And I would just have automatic transfers set up. And when my paycheck would hit the next day, you know, 10% would go to the Lord's money. You know, X percent would go here. X amount would go here to my car insurance fund or whatever. You know, all these different funds, it would just automatically disperse. I didn't have to do anything. Now I have to do that more manually for a lot of things. But Ramsey, when he was quoting John Maxwell in Ramsey's book, The Total Money Makeover, he said, a budget is people telling their money where to go instead of wondering where it went. I've given you this quote before, but I thought it was so good I'd say it again. A budget is people telling their money where to go instead of wondering where it went. See, most people wonder where it went, but you don't want to be most people, right? You want to be smart. You want to tell your money where to go. You want your money to be your slave, not your master. Ramsey said, you have to tell money what to do or it leaves. You ever notice that? He also wrote, money won't behave unless you tame it. P.T. Barnum said, money is an excellent slave and a horrible master. You wouldn't build a house without a blueprint, so why would you spend your lifetime income of over $2 million without a blueprint? That's what the average person makes, is $2 million over the course of his lifetime. And what does the average American have left over at the end of his lifetime after making $2 million? Big fat zero. Most of them don't have anything. They might have some equity in their house, and that's about it. After making $2 million. This is from Thomas J. Stanley in The Millionaire Next Door. He said, is anyone in your household responsible for budgeting? All too often, the answer is not really. All too often, people allow their income to define their budgets. See, that's what broke people do. They let their income define their budget. They basically, whatever their income is, they spend it, right? And that's the only limitation. The only limitation on how much I spend is how much I make. And if I make more, I just spend more, right? That's not budgeting. When we tell our audiences about the budgeting and planning habits of the affluent, someone always asks a predictable question. Why would someone who is a millionaire need to budget? Our answer is always the same. They became millionaires by budgeting and controlling expenses, and they maintain their affluent status the same way. That's funny, though. I mean, that would be the average person's response. Why would a millionaire need to budget? That's why he's a millionaire. That's why he's a millionaire, and he wouldn't be if he didn't budget, or if he didn't create artificial scarcity in his life, one of the two. That's the only two ways that you're ever going to get ahead, either budgeting or artificial scarcity. Artificial scarcity means you set aside 20% of your income for savings, and then you just willy-nilly live off the rest of it, but it doesn't matter because you already took 20% off the top, and if you're an idiot with the rest of it, it doesn't matter because you've already saved first, right? You've made you've set up an economic environment of artificial scarcity. So those are the only two ways that you will ever get ahead with money. Now, I recommend finding a bank or a credit union. Credit unions are better than banks, I think. They're owned by the people that use them, and they're less likely to screw you than banks are. But get a bank or credit union which allows you to open up as many checking accounts or many checking and savings accounts. I recommend at least 10. I mean, get a bank that will let you do at least 10 checking or savings accounts. 20 would be better, all under one login. So when you log into your bank account, you've got 10 or 20 different accounts in there. Each of them has their own account number. You can transfer between, from one to the other. Like you're not logging into a different account, or it's not a different bank or something like that. You just have a bunch of different accounts under there. Think of it as the envelope system in a bank, right? Think about the envelope system. If you just had a box and you had 10 envelopes in it, and this envelope's for groceries, and this envelope's for clothing, and this envelope's for my rent, and this envelope's for, my car insurance or whatever. Think about that. You want to find a bank where you can do the same thing. Each envelope is a separate account, and the box is your overall bank account, right? The box is your login to your bank, whatever that is, and the envelopes are separate accounts within that same login area. I assume you know what I'm talking about, I hope. You definitely want this, though. You don't want 20 different bank accounts, like where you're logging into each different one. I mean, that'd be crazy, right? And then set up different bank accounts and automatic transfers to transfer set amounts of money every time you get paid to those different accounts for various things, such as the following. And I'm going to list you off different funds that I think you ought to have set up. And I do every single one of these myself. Every single one of them, with the exception of the college fund, because I don't have any kids, and the children's fund, because I don't have any kids, right? But with those two exceptions, and if I see any other ones, I'll let you know, I have every one of these for myself and more that I haven't even listed. The first fund is God's Money Fund. I recommend putting 10% of your gross income in this fund. And I made my case for 10% of your gross income in the Giving to God series, so I won't go over all that again. But remember, God gets the first fruits. This is why this is the first fund. God gets the first fruits, not the leftovers. Proverbs 3, 9 through 10. I've been over this verse many times, but I'll read it again. Proverbs 3, 9 through 10. Honor the Lord with thy substance, and with the first fruits of all thine increase. So shall thy barns be filled with plenty, and thy presses shall burst out with new wine. See, there's a blessing associated with that, as you saw there in the second verse. You remember, God gets the first fruits, not the leftovers, right? If you give to God your leftovers, well, don't be surprised if maybe all you get is leftovers. You give the first fruits, don't be surprised when your barns are filled with plenty. He does promise to bless with abundance those that give unto him. Now, the reason that some Christians don't do this is because they obviously don't believe that God will do what he says he will do. Because you'd have to be crazy. If you actually believed that if I give the Lord my first fruits, which in the Bible was a tithe, if I give to the Lord the first fruits, and God says my barns will be filled with plenty, if you actually believed that, you'd be crazy not to do it, would you not? Right? The only reason you wouldn't do it is if you're like, I doubt it. How is God going to fill my barns, right? I mean, I'm in some dead-end job or whatever. How is God ever going to fill my barns? There's just no way. This isn't going to happen. And that's why some Christians just don't do it, because it's just simply a lack of faith. That is all there is to it. There is no other way of putting it. It is a lack of faith. If they believed God, they would do it. And they would experience it. I have, and I've seen it happen with lots of people. But on the other hand, if you skimp on God, you will not prosper. Haggai 1, 3 through 9. I know I preached on this before, but it's important, I think, to remind. This is a really important thing. In my opinion, you could get everything right 100% when it comes to your money. And if you don't get this one right, I would not have high hopes for your financial future. This is the most important one. This is the foundation, the backbone. You don't get this right, don't be surprised if the rest of your economic life does not go well. Haggai 1, 3 through 9. Then came the word of the Lord by Haggai the prophet, saying, Is it time for you, O ye, to dwell in your sealed houses, and this house lie waste? Well, they were taking care of their own houses, making them nice. God's house is lying there in ruins. They weren't taking care of God, they were taking care of themselves. Now therefore, thus saith the Lord of hosts, consider your ways. You've sown much. Oh yeah, you went out there, you worked a lot, you put a lot into it, you planted all these seeds in the field, you've sown much and bring in little. What's going on there? I've been working like crazy and I'm just getting nowhere, it seems like. You eat, but you have not enough. I just always feel like I'm still hungry. I just keep eating and I just don't feel like I'm ever satisfied. You drink, but you're not filled with drink. You clothe you, but there is none warm. Kind of like when you got a bad flu or something like that, right? You just pile all the clothing on. You're still cold, right? This is what these people are experiencing. Like, what's going on here? I've got all these clothes and I still feel cold. I've got all this food. I still feel hungry. I'm working like crazy and nothing. I'm not getting anywhere. And he that earneth wages to put it into a bag with holes. I just feel like, where's my paycheck going? I got all this money coming in, and then at the end of the month, I look and it's all gone. I don't know what's happened. It's almost as if I've got holes in my pockets and the money's just falling out. I can't even figure out what's happening to it. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, consider your ways. Go up to the mountain and bring wood and build the house, and I will take pleasure in it, and I will be glorified, saith the Lord. Ye looked for much, and lo, it came to little. You had high hopes for your finances, but what's going on here? You're broke. And when ye brought it home, I did blow upon it. See, you want to blow your money on everything but me and my house? I'll blow your money for you, he says. I blew upon it. Why, saith the Lord of hosts, because of mine house that is waste, and ye run every man unto his own house. So do you feel like you're always struggling to get by? Consider your ways. Do you wonder why you can't ever seem to get ahead? Consider your ways. Do you wonder why you can't ever seem to get out of debt? Consider your ways. This is what the Lord says. The next fund you want to set up, and these aren't in any particular order, But the next fund I think would be a good one to set up second is a generosity fund. Like I said, some of these things I've done for decades. This one was a newer one for me, maybe within the last few years. I don't remember exactly when I started this, but it's been a few years ago anyway. And I recommend, I think this is a great idea. I was so glad that I did it. It's such a blessing. You set up this generosity fund. You put a certain amount, a set amount of each paycheck into this fund to be used to be generous toward others. Now, this is different from God's money. This is not the same thing. You know, the Lord's money can be used to give to others, you know, if they have medical needs or they're in need of food, clothing, shelter, right? Basic needs like that God does authorize for, you know, the money that is for him can go towards those needs. But I'm talking about other things besides that. This money can be used to give gifts to people, to give the money to help them out, maybe, just to do random acts of kindness, you know, like, just buying the guy in line behind you his drink, or the guy in the drive-thru behind you his meal, or whatever. I mean, it could be anything, whatever you want to do, just to be do nice and kind things for people. Taking people out to eat, donating to causes or organizations that you believe in, you want to support, right? Whatever. You can use it for whatever you want. I would say, personally, as long as it's for other people. I don't use the fund for myself. You know, we don't say, hey, you know, let's go out to eat. I'm going to be generous to my wife today or whatever. That doesn't count. You and your wife are one, right? So you can't use it to be generous to your wife or your spouse. At least I can't. I mean, like, it's your money. You can do whatever you want. But for me, you know, it's for other people outside of our own house. Now, here's the great thing, I think, about it. Having a generosity fund will help people who are irresponsible with money and who are too generous, because there are some people like that. They give the shirt off their back when they really shouldn't be. Like, they need to be putting their own oxygen mask on first before they put another one on somebody else. So this will help people who are irresponsible with money and too generous. It'll help them to be more careful, because when the generosity fund is empty for the month, well, guess what? Time to quit being generous to other people. And it will help those who are not naturally generous to be so. Because there are, you know, usually you got the two different types of people, right? The spenders and the savers. And typically the spenders are more generous and the savers are more stingy, right? That maybe not always the case, but that is the case a lot of times. And so if you're a saver, sometimes it's pretty hard to be generous to others because you're just always looking at your budget and you're thinking, oh, I don't know if I can afford that. But the thing is, when you budget it out and you put the money in the account, then it's just sitting there. And then maybe if you are not naturally generous and then you're putting the same amount in it month after month, and then you look at it and you're like, whoa, there's a bunch of money in there. I have to force myself. I got to go be generous to somebody. I got to figure out something to do for somebody, right? So this helps people that are, you know, not naturally generous to be so. All right, taxes fund. This is my least favorite fund, but it's very necessary if you're self-employed anyway. Essential for anyone that's self-employed. You want to put a set percentage based on your income level and your tax bracket of all your income that you receive into this fund. You'll then use this fund to pay your quarterly taxes, which, if you don't know what that is, self-employed people do. But if you're self-employed, you have to send a check to the government every 3 months based on your estimated, what you think your estimated earnings will be for that year. And you send them a check every 3 months. And then you have to pay. If you made more than you expected you would, then you got to pay more at the end of the year. And if not, then you'll get a refund. But anyway, so you pay your quarterly taxes and you pay any other taxes that are due at filing time out of that fund. Now, here's just my recommendation. This is for self-employed people. Make the percentage higher than you think it needs to be. If you look at it and say, I'm in the 22% tax bracket, I'm in the 12% tax bracket, whatever you're in, and don't forget about Social Security, you're going to have to pay that. It's going to be 13.5% of your income. And don't forget about state income tax. That's going to be another 5% or depending on where you live. So you figure all that out, and I'd say then add a little bit to it just to be safe. Now, chances are you'll probably end up having extra in the account left over because you probably didn't factor in your write-offs and deductions and all that. But I'd much rather have a bunch left over than have to pay it out of some other fund, you know. So, figure out put more in there than you think you'll need. It's always better to have it and not need it than to need it and not have it. And if you put too much in the fund, it just becomes an extra savings account that you can use next year. You can use for whatever you want, right? It's not like you're paying the government extra taxes, right? Interest free. You're putting it in your own bank account and if you put it in a high yield savings account, you're making a decent interest rate on it. And it's just another savings account if you don't end up sending it all to the leeches. But if you don't put enough in, then you're going to be in a pickle in come April. All right, let's see how far are we here. I'll probably just, I got a bunch of pages left. Let's see here. Let's just get to the next page. I'll just do one more fund. Let's do the emergency fund. I didn't get anywhere near so where I thought I would. You think this, if you think, why should I be surprised, right? But anyway. All right, the emergency fund. This is another important one. I mean, they're all important, but this is a really important one. So after paying off your debt, then you want to put every spare dollar that you have in this account until it's fully funded with 3 to 6 months of living expenses. So at this point in the game, you're still being intense, right? If you had any debt, you paid it all off. You were scorched earth on it. And then this is no time to let up. This is no time to take a break. This is no time to celebrate and go out to eat. Maybe if you want to do one little celebration after you pay the debt off, maybe you could do that. But this is no time to let off. Then you take all that money you were putting toward that debt and you pile it into that emergency fund until you get 3 to 6 months of expenses. Now, of course, let me see a show of hands here. How many of you, let's see how well you know me. Do you think that I personally want to have 3 months of expenses or 6 or more months of expenses saved up? How many people think 3? Okay, none of you. How many of you think 6 or more? Okay, you know me pretty well. I don't like to live on the edge. 3 months is living on the edge for me. 3 months, that's like, you know, I'm only 3 months away from being on the street or something. So I don't like that. So I like 6 months a lot better. But you want to have at least 3 to 6 months. And this is living expenses, okay? So this is not 3 to 6 months of paychecks, right? Because your paycheck covers a lot more than your living expenses. If your paycheck went away, you know, there'd be plenty of things that you don't need to spend money on that wouldn't be coming out of your paycheck anymore. I mean, if you have no paycheck, you're not giving to the Lord anymore, right? So, I mean, you don't need that money in your budget, and you wouldn't need any money laid aside for taxes, at least income taxes, if you have no paycheck, and so on. And, of course, no savings, no investing. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff that wouldn't be coming out of your paycheck if you don't have a paycheck, right? So you don't need 3 to 6 months of paychecks. You need 3 to 6 months of living expenses. This is your rainy day fund for when unexpected things come up, such as house repairs or health costs or child-related costs, you know, things like that. Now, what I like to do, and I mean, granted, I'm probably a little bit maybe over the top, but like, for example, those examples I just gave you, house repairs, I wouldn't use an emergency fund for house repairs because I've got a house repair fund, right? So that I wouldn't use that for house repairs. Health costs. I wouldn't use an emergency fund for health costs either because I've got a medical fund saved up, you know, and ideally you have enough in there to cover your out-of-pocket max, so, you know, you wouldn't have health costs. Now, you could have health costs that are outside of the traditional medical system, like alternative stuff. That can end up costing you a pile. I know all about that. That could come out of your emergency fund if you needed to. Child-related costs, again, you know, that would be like in the child fund or something. But there could be, you know, unexpected things just come up, and that would be for your emergency fund. And most especially if you lose your job. I mean, to me, that's the big thing. That's the emergency fund. If you lose your job, you've got 6 months where you can survive. You know, you don't have to sell your house, or you don't have to move in with your family or whatever. You know, you don't have to resort to desperate measures if you lose your job. You know, you got 6 months at least to get back on your feet. It'll give you peace of mind. Now, like I said, you should have enough to cover all of your expenses, not your income, but your expenses for at least 3 to 6 months with no income. And this fund should be liquid, meaning that it's easily and quickly accessible. Okay? Now, you don't want to be too easily accessible, and I'll talk about that in a second, but you want it to be easily accessible, right? You don't put your emergency fund in a Rembrandt or something, right? In a Picasso, in a piece of artwork that's worth $10,000 or something like that, because that's not liquid, right? If you need money, you know, that was an extreme example to make the point. But you want a separate high-yield savings account or a money market account. This is a good place to put your emergency fund. You want it to be making as much money as possible, but in a safe and easily accessible place, right? You don't want to put it in CDs because, you know, if you take money out of a CD, you'll lose the interest that you made. You're not going to lose any of the principal, but you'll lose the interest. So, you know, that doesn't make any sense. You don't want to put it in stocks, especially. That's a good way to lose a bunch of money. Imagine you take your emergency fund. You got $15,000 in your emergency fund, and you go and invest it in Tesla stock, and Tesla drops, you know, from whatever it is to half that price. Now you got $5,000 in your emergency fund, and all of a sudden, I need to dip in the emergency fund right now, and guess what? I just lost 50% of my money. That would be really dumb. So don't invest this in stocks. Anything like that. Your investments can go in that kind of stuff, but not your emergency fund. And don't even invest it in precious metals because they're not liquid enough, right? And again, precious metals can go up and down in value too. Believe me, I know all about it. I've watched it happen for decades now. So you don't want to do that. They maintain their purchasing power over time, but from month to month, year to year, they can go way up, they can go way down. And furthermore, they're not liquid. You know, you got to run down to a coin shop somewhere and sell it. And it's just not, this is not where you want to put your emergency fund. But it should also not be too easy to access. So you don't want to have your emergency fund just sitting in your checking account, right? You don't want to have your emergency fund just sitting in your only savings account, right? Where $15,000 of my savings account is my emergency fund and anything above 15 is for something else. Don't do that. You want this to be a completely separate account, you know, where it's, you don't touch it, but you can easily get to it. And that, I'll stop there for the day. We've already been at an hour and 12 minutes, and I didn't probably even get a third through the outline. So next Sunday, we'll pick it up, Lord willing. We'll look at these other funds, and we'll look at a bunch of other interesting stuff, Lord willing. So thank you for your kind and patient attention.